Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas is John Popola and Lisa Versace. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
How long have you been working on At the Fork?
So this project really began with Lisa coming to me saying I had an amazing conversation with someone interested in supporting a film about my favorite subject, animals, and why we should reconsider how we eat. And that was back in December of 2014, right, Lise?
You're asking me about time?
Maybe that's a bad... I think it was around December, yeah. But
no, you're right, yeah.
I thought perhaps it was influenced by Lisa's vegetarianism that you got into this whole discovery process.
Yeah, you know, it's always been a passion of mine. And in the early 90s, I was instrumental in getting the vegan burger on the menu at Burger King.
Yay.
Oh, wow.
My dad's a Burger King franchisee, and I thought I'd never be able to do anything else for animals in my lifetime that would have that much impact. But perhaps this film will have a greater impact than the veggie burger even.
Who knows?
Yeah. You know, it's something where when Lisa and I first met, I saw her, and we were working at Nickelodeon together. And I thought, look at this pretty girl. And I think she's Italian, too, because I'm 100% Italian from South Philadelphia. And then she starts talking about her diet, and I was like, oh, no.
That's the first thing that came up?
I was like, all right, well, I think I can, we'll figure it out.
Well, you know.
What about my Philly cheesesteak? Oh, no.
Well, it's funny because the film opens with you all at a family cookout, I guess, and it just talks about how that's a center point of as a family tradition. And I think that's consistent for so many families as they have, you know, one event or two, a couple events each year, where really the signature piece of the meal is some large amount of meat or various forms of meat. And how did it go originally in these family events, Lisa, for you and trying to stay the course?
You know, my mother-in-law brings up a story. One of the first dinners I shared with John's family, I knew that they had a dog that they really loved named Abby. And I think I compared their meat to their dog, Abby.
Uh-huh.
Ingratiating her with my mother from the very beginning.
And that I didn't see much difference in all animals. And to this day, you know, she brings that up as one of the more shocking conversations she's had around the dinner table.
So I guess there must have been some hesitation on your part, John, and embarking on this journey to look at how our food is made, wondering, you know, if the conclusions that you might come to were less than you'd be happy with. Were you at all concerned that you might just be forever changed by the process, or how were you feeling going into it?
Well, to be honest, you know, Lisa and I have now been married for 13 years and known each other for longer. And I hope I'd be changed in a way, because I've certainly been exposed to the arguments about the morals around eating meat and, you know, raising animals and food. But they've just never had quite the impact, the sort of trade-off, especially when we're with my family or even Lisa's family. Trade-off between participating in that communal family experience and adhering to an ethical concept around the food just didn't have a, it didn't work. And so I think for me coming into it, I was hoping that this would be something that would get me to feel this in a visceral way, because I think for so many people, you hear these arguments from a family member or a friend, and then you go out to eat and get a hamburger, and it's like, well,
right,
yeah, that's interesting.
You go into a trance.
I'll get extra bacon on that burger. And that's kind of the end of it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think, you know, what you do in the film, you know, you explore some of the various kinds of meat. You know, you look at battery cage hens and chickens and pigs, and cows, and towards the beginning of the movie, you go and visit a feedlot. And I'm wondering if you all could talk a little bit, just because, you know, as you hit on in the movie and we talk about on the show quite a bit, is that disconnect between what we see, you know, the farms, how animals are actually raised, and how we never see that anymore, and how much, you know, we've changed as a country in the last 50, 60 years. And so I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about how your experience was, you know, going to the feedlot for cows.
For me, it was really upsetting. And all I could see was the hot sun and that the cows were just kind of stumbling around in their own feces. And they didn't look like the cows that I had seen out on pasture at the farm we were at earlier in the day at all. They weren't expressing any natural behaviors. They were just kind of standing there, and they looked unhappy. And for John, I think he was just overwhelmed by the sheer number of cattle. I mean, there were 100,000 cows in one small area, kind of crammed in these small pens, and it just didn't register in the same. Like, he couldn't single out a single cow and feel empathy for that cow.
Huh.
He just saw that the number and was actually, I think he was kind of impressed by the operation, how large it was or something. I don't know.
Right.
I mean, what was going through your mind, John?
So I think the context for the experience at the feedlot, which people, you know, get to see in the movie, it has to be surrounding the fact that we had already seen this spectrum with the way pigs are raised. And it's so striking, the difference for a pig. I mean, the mother pigs, the sows, many of them. It might not be most anymore, but certainly a large number.
I think it's still most.
Yeah, it might still be most. Or spend most of their lives in a gestation crate or stall.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, this is an apparatus that is, it basically looks like an Iron Maiden without the spikes for an animal that's smarter than your dog.
Right.
And for me, of all the experiences, seeing those pigs, you know, in these different systems and seeing the differences in their behavior and seeing the way a mother pig defends her piglets and nurtures them and loves them, and that was just so dramatic for me that all the other systems and all the other things somewhat paled in comparison. And so I guess when I was on the feedlot, I saw the cows, and they're walking in their mud, and they're in heat, and I'd heard from Temple Grandin that the heat stress is a big problem for them, and it's very uncomfortable, and yeah, they're walking around their own poop. And Lisa was horrified. We left this moment in the movie. I didn't have that quite the same reaction, and I think part of that is because in comparison to the experience of pigs, the differences between cows walking around on grass versus walking around in the mud of a feedlot, it just wasn't as extreme. And
right.
So, it was a very, but on top of that, she's right that the scale and scope of these operations sort of short circuits some of your mind. I mean, we're just, we talked to an animal scientist who talked about this. He talked about the psychology of large numbers and the sort of way that when you start to put things into such large numbers, whether it's the cows on feedlots or chickens inside the growing barns, and you're seeing 35,000 chickens all together, and it just looks like this white, fluffy mass.
Yeah.
They become objectified. They become objects instead of subjects.
Right. And you know, and it's not even just, I think, with animals. You know, you talk about global problems, or you talk about hundreds of thousands of people starving to death, and people feel, I don't know if they feel a lack of ability to do anything about it. Whereas if you were to reach out to someone and say, look, this child is starving in this country, can you help make it happen? Of course, someone's going to jump into it and try and, you know, make it better. But, you know, so there's something about numbers, too, in all capacities, I think, for humans that just makes it harder for some to really grasp, you know, how they can change it or what they can change about it.
You know, I read an interesting review of the movie that talked about at the fork could mean that there are three forks in the road. That one fork, you can choose to eat any meat, however it's raised. At the second fork, you can choose to eat happy meat that's treated kindly and raised organically. And then the final fork in the road is to give up animal products. The middle fork about happy meat, we vegans often make the argument that it would be unsustainable for the environment, as well as it would be prohibitively costly to pasture-raise all the animals.
We've heard so many different arguments, everything from the Serengeti model is going to reforest the land and sequester carbon to this is absolutely possible and we have enough grazing lands and farmlands. We're just not managing them properly. Hmm. And we've heard every single kind of argument.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing is, you know, oh, maybe because this is more expensive, everyone will eat less of it, which is ultimately the goal anyway for our health.
Uh-huh.
And for resource, sustainability or whatever. So, you know, we've heard every argument. Do I buy into that? No, of course not. I wish everyone would stop eating all animal products. It's completely unnecessary. But what one thing we did in the film is kind of stay away from those grand statements or numbers and facts and figures because, to be perfectly honest, I think it's too complex of a puzzle to try to figure out. And certainly with meat consumption on the rise globally, it does seem like an untenable situation to try to put all these animals out on pasture. But, I don't even think there's enough space in the United States to put all these animals out on pasture. I don't know. I haven't done that. Those numbers.
I sort of, having been on all these farms, I don't think there's such a thing as happy meat. I think every animal that's raised for food is going to, inevitably encounter some amount of suffering.
We definitely experienced that. We witnessed that time and time again, no matter what farm we were on.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime humans are interacting with these farm animals, there is going to be some suffering going on.
You know, and then I think somebody like Temple Grandin would say, well, nature's cruel, too, and animals are cruel to each other. And so for me, I find the ethical arguments of an animal rights perspective or a vegan perspective to be incredibly persuasive. I think that they are coherent. It's a coherent worldview. So to me, I think that the issue boils down to any ideology or any ethical framework, you ultimately need to generate consent among people to be a part of it and to participate in it. You can't force people into a belief. I don't think that that's the way social change occurs. I think you need to make your team appealing and attractive to as many people as possible, without compromising your fundamental principles. And so for me, the arguments that I've been exposed to and that Lisa and I had talked about a lot of length, sort of, this is part of our daily lives, frankly, about these distinctions in the animal protection and animal rights and animal welfare world, I see them all on a spectrum of consciousness, and I think that we're in a position where so few people have any consciousness about this issue at all that any step along that path is a step in the right direction.
True. And I see your movie as appealing to the more mainstream audience, the people that don't want to watch video shot by an undercover guy from Mercy for Animals or something. Yours is a movie that will get people thinking about it. It's a step along the road as to where we all want to be, I believe.
Thank you for saying that. That means a lot to me because a lot of vegans and abolitionists do not support an incrementalist path. And I think that for the most part, that's really true. And it feels very good to hear that from you.
You can't twist their arms into making them vegan. All you can do is keep exposing the truth.
As long as we can get people to think, to make the connection that those that meat on their plate is an animal and that had a mom that lived a life, that's a step in the right direction. It can lead to veganism, vegetarianism, eating less meat, as long as we can get people thinking and being reminded that this is a life.
Yeah, I was going to add that too, because I like about the film is that it doesn't draw a lot of deductions for people. It lets, for the more skeptical people, and I there's a few people in my family and French circle who I thought of that this would appeal to them, because if you start sometimes with where you're going to go with something, they already shut off and they're not going to follow. So at least it allows them to explore and learn about the different kinds of farming that's going on and see that, you know, for instance, that everything isn't perfect in a happier farm. You know, you all went to the, I want to say it was the organic farm in Iowa, and, you know, you still have to watch the pigs, you know, with their tails being docked without anesthesia and being
castrated, and artificially inseminated. That's exactly right. And you know, that farmer in Iowa, he doesn't tail dock, but you know, he showed us all those practices, and then after he watched the film, he was a very brave farmer, by the way, to show us all those practices on camera. But I commend him for that. But he said, "You're telling people there's no such thing as Santa." So in that sense, you know, it's true. You know, we do show there is no such thing as happy meat, really, truly. But, you know, at the same time, it is a step for a lot of people who are just kind of blindly looking for the cheapest meat and the cheapest eggs available. I mean, those lives matter. These people are still going to continue to eat meat. They should at least give an animal a more natural life.
Yeah, ethical consumers, you know, can't really look away from this. I mean, they need to care about where their food comes from and at least spend some time exploring a better way to live, even if it's not an ideal way.
I think it's another tool in the toolbox that we have as vegans to convert people. And this is the most gentle film in this genre that I've ever seen.
I think so, too.
It started way back for me with the film Diet for a New America, and I would watch people squirm, and I would, you know, and I loved every minute of it. And then, you know, we had Forks Over Knives, and that made a very strong case. And we still have all those films, and I'm grateful for films, even, you know, the Earthlings of the world too. I think it's what are people ready for on their path, and this can be a great first step.
Right.
And so I'm.
After this, they can go on to meet your meat.
People.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I got to say, and I don't want to spoil the film too much, but I think one of the most touching scenes for me were watching the kids in the 4-H program and just see them, the struggle, you know, with kids that spend their, you know, a couple of years of their life, you know, raising these animals and developing bonds, and how they struggle not to name them. And I got to say that really was, a touching part of the film.
That was the only scene that I directed. So it makes sense that you would like that. I really, from the beginning, when we started the casting process, I had a lot of, let's just say, heated debates about casting a kid who's in 4-H, because I thought it would perfectly illustrate the bond without having to have some talking head just talking about our bond with animals and how we can love them the same as a family member. I wanted these innocent children to be able to show us that, yes, this happens, and this is an emotional experience. And I just happened to come across those two great kids. We were at the state fair for a different reason to shoot the governor giving an egg producer an award. And I snuck away and started shooting these two other kids. And I actually stayed behind with a separate film crew to get that story. And I think it is, like you said, it's one of the most emotional scenes in the film.
It's got to be very psychologically disturbing for a young person to raise an animal like that and then send it off to slaughter.
Well, Jenna's gone vegetarian. The girl that was crying in the film.
Right.
Yeah, she's wonderful.
Well, I was going to say the one thing, yeah, Lisa, well, you know, you see a lot of Lisa and I's Nickelodeon roots in the tone of the movie, I think. It is a gentle movie. I mean, it, you know, and we try to treat every subject with the love and care that we feel like they deserve for participating. It's such a difficult thing to open your life up to cameras, especially today when it's a safe assumption that you're going to be just ripped to shreds in the edit room. I mean, you know,
right. Yeah.
We live in the Kardashians era, so there's a whole different conception of, you know, what bringing cameras into your life is going to be like. But the 4-H kids are remarkable. I mean, those programs are explicitly designed to try to get kids to learn to break their bond with the animals and to learn how to be farmers.
Yeah, right.
And we can find that disturbing. But as a parent of an 11-year-old I was also sort of struck by how in this sort of age of infinite screen time, you have these experiences where these kids develop grit and struggle with moral challenges. And I was a little taken by the impact of those experiences on those kids. They just seem to be like world-class future adults. It is disturbing to think about raising something that you love like a dog and then sending it off to be eaten by somebody.
Yeah, but you know what? I wanted to go in and hate 4-H, and what I realized is any farmers who have these experiences as children who go in to raise, let's just say, pigs, for instance, they're going to know if a pig is acting funny or strange or is not quite right because they've had all these experiences. Every year they raise a new pig. And so I would actually prefer that a farmer has had all these experiences as a child growing up versus just coming in cold and not knowing the intimate, you know, relationship and behavioral issues that pigs can have. I don't know. I mean, you can argue, yes, it's designed to break the bond and toughen up these kids, but also I think it gives them a greater understanding of the nuances of raising these animals.
Can you tell our listeners where they can go to learn more about the film At the Fork?
Yeah, so we have a website, atthefork.com. Right now, we're actually, you know, about to get some distribution that'll make the film more broadly available, perhaps as early as the fall. But for now, if you go to atthefortfilm.com, we're working with Tug, which is a screening platform that can help anybody bring the movie to their local community, whether in a local theater or a community center or a church or even their own home, and host a screening or participate in a screening that someone else in the area is hosting. And then we also have a 360 mobile app for both the iPhone and Android. So while we were going around to these farms last summer, we actually brought a little 360 rig with us. And wow. So you can actually experience an 11-minute short film where you get to be on these farms in these, you know, gives you some time to just observe these systems that these animals live in.
We've been talking with John Popola and Lisa Versace, the filmmakers behind At the Fork. Thanks so much for being with us, John and Lisa.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.